And you know, I was their temporary manager, and I discovered that I only lasted 4 months. It was going to be a temp job anyway. I discovered that if you become the manager of people whose massive fame has nothing to do with you, there is no reason for them to ever listen to you, right? So I was there kind of like furniture, and I knew that I had made the wrong decision because I assumed that the term Eraserheads came from a David Lynch movie I loved, which is Eraserhead. And so, you know, when we got to LA, someone from the indie press had suggested, oh, let's take a photograph of the band in front of the coffee shop where Jack Nance, the actor who played Eraserhead, was bludgeoned to death. It was kind of a morbid concept, but I suggested it to the band, and they said, you know, we don't really, we finally saw Eraserhead. They had named the band before seeing the movie. We finally saw Eraserhead. We don't like it. And that's when I knew I was in the wrong place. Okay, and so, which I think accounts for the fact that they would prefer to refer to themselves as the E-heads. Along with writing a column, because in the Philippines, if you do well, if a lot of people read the columns and the books of the collections of the columns, they think it's a reward for you to go to television. So I did television for a while, and I was one of the hosts of a current affairs show, and I find TV extremely boring and tedious because everyone is making a fuss about your makeup and whether you're shiny, and no one really cares what is coming out of your mouth. So it was not for me. Radio I enjoyed because basically you put me in front of a microphone and I can keep talking. And then, in the 90s, one of the major events was that Sex and the City started coming out on cable. And Sex and the City made it required for any straight woman who got it to have a gay best friend. Okay, so gay best friends were the handbags of the 90s. And the thing is, when I was writing Twisted, I guess because I'm writing from the position of an outsider, you know, a nerd commenting about things that I am watching from the outside, I've always had a great affinity to gay people. And so I can tell you that 90% of the time I am hanging out with gay people, sometimes weeks pass before I talk to a straight person. Okay, so if gay people were the handbag of the 90s, I am the handbag of the gay people. And so there. And then in the 90s, I started traveling, and that's when I started expanding my reading, because I would read the books by the citizens of, or set in the places that I was going to. So I've in the last 2 decades, I've read a lot of books set in Venice, Prague, Paris, Warsaw, and most recently in Spain. Okay? And then in the early 2000s, one of the columns I wrote became what was spun off into a monthly magazine called Flip, The Official Guide to World Domination. This is the column where I said that the Philippines can take over the world just by organizing all the OFWs, particularly the nannies and the domestic workers, into one army. And then, you know, we could take over just by going on strike, right? And this became the basis for a magazine, which lasted 8 issues because we ran out of money. That's when I learned that, because, you know, it was funded by rich people. And that's when I discovered that the line in Almost Famous is true. It was uttered by Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was playing the very influential music critic Lester Bangs. He said, "These people are not your friends." Okay, you should remember this as you go through life when you're flattered because rich people kind of adopt you, treat you like one of them. these people are not your friends. Okay? And so I had already quit my old paper today. I started writing columns for the Philippine Star and Interaction. And then in 2014, I had a medical drama. My brain shut down. And it was a simple case of water intoxication. It happens a lot to marathon runners, which is the only time I will ever have anything to do, anything in common with marathon runners. Basically, I had had the flu. I was only drinking fluids and not eating. Don't do that because basically you vent all your electrolytes, so my sodium and potassium levels dropped. And so my brain shut down, and as luck would have it, I had an appointment that day, and I went out of the house. I said goodbye to my cats. I locked the door. My brain shut down. I sat on the stairs. And lucky me, because if I had stayed in the house, my brain would have shut down, and then I would have gone into a coma without, you know, any sort of aid. But, you know, I sat on the stairs, and, you know, I think my eyeballs were white, kind of like, you know, Jon Snow. Like before wargs in Game of Thrones would turn into ravens and so forth. And the janitor and the building admin took me to the hospital, where the emergency room doctor said, oh, it's water intoxication. We just have to bring her electrolyte levels back up, and then she'll be fine. So they put me in the hospital, because they have to do that slowly, or else, you know, if your sodium goes up too fast, your brain will explode. So I'm in the hospital, and then the doctors in Makati Med, I hate Makati Med, the doctors in Makati Med looked at me and said, surely that's not the only thing wrong with this woman. So they put me through every medical test known to man. They gave me a spinal tap for water intoxication. And the strange result of having spent over a week in the hospital was that I found out that I am in perfect health. But then, you know, it is 2014. And I began to think, you know, what else am I going to do? I've been doing the same thing for two decades. I still don't have a novel. I have only one collection of short stories. And I have to continually crank out columns and features in order to support myself. There has to be a way out of this. And then, you know, 2016 happened, and as far as I know, 2016, the apocalypse already happened, because, well, first David Bowie died, and then Prince died, and then, you know, the regimes, and then the swing to the far right all over the world, and I thought, I can't write a column anymore. You know, there's no talking to trolls. I think that it's time to stop and write a novel, which I had been threatening to do all my life. And so I quit all my columns, and I wrote a novel. And the great thing about having written three columns a week for 20 years is that I wrote my novel in 3 months. Because, you know, it's really all about habit. You know, when people ask me, what is your writing process? It's really habit. As in, you have to work yourself up to a state where if you don't write on a certain day, you feel ill. Okay, so I wrote that in 3 months, and Karina and the Ateneo Press will put it out later this year. Please buy it because, like I mentioned, working writer. But, you know, I was talking about, you know, the horror of semi-fame. The thing with having a lot of readers, followers, and so on is that people feel that they know you, especially if you've been on television. You've been in their house. And so they feel free to accost you whatever you're doing. You can be in a restaurant eating, and, you know, you're putting food in your mouth. And then someone comes up and starts having a really personal conversation. And that's when I got a reputation as a bitch, because, you know, if I'm eating, you cannot stand between me and my food. I'm not saying that I don't deserve the reputation, but, you know, people will interrupt you because there's a sense of ownership that comes from being your faithful reader, okay? But then, semi-fame, because I'm not famous enough to be bribed or offered, you know, the big bucks gigs, advertising, etc. But then I've known for a long time that fame is the main currency of Philippine society, because in the Philippines, you know, social mobility is really hard. Education has always been the way to move to a higher socioeconomic bracket, but because education is limited to a very small part of the population, people clamor to become famous so that they can rise, you know, and carry their families with them. Hence, the popularity of basketball, of beauty comments, of beauty contests, pag-aartista, and so forth. And so, everybody wants to be famous. And you know that in a world where everybody is famous, no one is famous. So everyone has expectations of the semi-famous that I like to thwart, because that is my quote-unquote brand. And so as part of being this year's holder of the Irwin Memorial Chair, I'm also conducting a writing workshop over 4 weeks. Unfortunately, the application period is over. The names of the eight who have been accepted for the workshop will be announced next week. And right now, I am paring down the list. I got something like 100 applications. And let me tell you that if I receive applications where the first line is, "Good Eve, what are the requirements?" Delete. Okay. And if the first word is, "Hi, I'm your biggest fan," delete. Okay, so next week I will announce the people who will be in the workshop. The eight who get in, I'm not saying that their work is better than everyone else's, but I chose the people whom I feel my skill set will be useful to. So most of them are rom-coms. Why is everybody writing about pag-ibig? As in, you know, it's okay if, you know, if there's a real problem that's keeping them apart, like your evil mother who wants her hands on her on the $2 billion you have earned since childhood. But you know, if the rom-com is they're in love but they're just too torpid to look at each other, that's it. You're not going to be in the workshop.